Hello, welcome back to Montana Voice. I hope you've been well. This episode continues with some readings of the more popular posts on my social media accounts, interspersed with some of my favorite sections from the novel Paper Targets. In this dream, I was shipwrecked and I was washed onto rocks. The weather was blue and bright, and until the ship sank, it had been a perfect voyage. "No problem," I said. "I'll just climb these cliffs." And I was smug because I knew the geology. "Pleistocene conglomerate," I said, and I felt safe in the way we feel safe when among people whose names and smiles we know. But in the dream, I was alone and drowning. I had done everything right. I had prepared and worked, and I had been kind, treating others as I would have wanted to be treated. But now the waves and the cliffs conspired with other plans. It was like those friends you one day discovered weren't really friends. I breathed water like a lung full of loneliness and then gasped and woke up. Distant sounds of crashing waves let me know I was still on the journey between rock and sky, between lies and truth, and still lucky enough to be navigating this cliff edge path where we have no choice but to keep going. It was a long time ago, but I used to be homeless, and I drifted between labor, between towns on my long path of lonely. What hurts sticks and can crush or make you. I don't think I was crushed, though I still remember everything. And I remember thinking it would be wonderful to live someplace with a lot of books and where I wouldn't be alone. Sleeping next to wire fences by highway sides, waking in the rain, hungry, walking in the rain, hungry, working in the fields of blowing poisonous dust, working on construction sites that steamed with asphalt and pounded with machines. Working next to other drifters who threatened and yelled, I would escape to wakeful dreams of a home, like this one where I am now, where she is with her books and our shared peaceful time. There were years when I slept outside so often that I thought of the stars as my blanket. Because I had no money, I did not like cities, and the best places were in the mountains or the deserts. Even then, I tried always to have a camera with me, usually an old and heavy Nikromat with a broken light meter, which I could find cheap at pawn shops. But those were times of fine grain plus X, a slow film that was made for daylight bright rocks and hills or for capturing the shadowed faces of the people I met. I would develop my film and print my pictures, holding a bit of the light from what I knew I might never see again, or which I already understood could not last. But I never tried to take pictures of the night sky. Isn't it odd how memories become the best pictures? What I saw when events were rushing, the people who have come and gone, all of it still has a lasting, high definition beyond any ISO number and way past all the brilliant technology and is woven into that blanket up there. It is a photographer's burden to remember too much, especially of what we did not try to capture. The years, as years do, spun me forward. Soon, in these words, pulling me towards a confession, I will explain how I changed from an honest laborer into someone else. I learned how to turn my ability with abstract ideas into money, and with that money, I moved away from the drifting hardness of the road. But I still was runaway lonely, and the money, which would become dirty, was not enough. I should have stopped. But at the deciding moments where I could have done something as simple as ignore a stranger or a phone call, I didn't. Blame it on the sidewalk crowds, the starkness of gray buildings in a strange city, or on the rain falling from a Montana sky. Blame it on quiet nights alone. If someone were to have drawn our lines, yours and mine, tracing where we traveled before we met, could anyone have looked at that map of knotted confusion and predicted what would not happen? Our lines converged as parallels, but disappeared into the illusion of touching, like all the train tracks that will never meet. I know what happened, but I still wonder if you ever think of me as I think of you, standing as I do on the edge of mapless places where I am forever falling into. It was a season of regrets and a year of muffled arguments when I lost my voice and tried to talk with clay. The spinning symmetry on the wheel calmed my hands, and the chemistry of the glowing glaze and the clicking heat pulled me from trying to understand what had gone wrong. Friends had died, and others were dying, and more had left. They had drunk their eyes yellow, or teased faraway ice until it had collapsed, or they just got ahead of schedule in their too fast way to gone. As I trimmed my drying pots, I wondered how many wrongs it took to make one love. Most of what I tried for ended up on the discard heap, thick failed shards next to the wood kiln, or dull brown vessels brought home but then put outside to be covered by snow. One perfect cup, fine and thin, with cottonwood blue glass from a week of ash, that became an artifact when you wrapped it in your green-eyed anger, put it into your pocket, and walked away. I found the West and nights in bunkhouses with the sounds of men coughing and drunks talking in their sleep. I found filthy motel rooms with stains on the wall and the forever miles of highways and roads. But I also found the sky, the rivers, and the wind, and I knew that the rooms were only for sleep and that the work was to be able to keep moving. Cities collect the runaways who are afraid of openness. The towns in the West collect the runaways who are afraid of not being able to keep running. Hunting alone, way up in the old rattlesnake, 47 elk in a single file walked by so near that I could smell their breath, like the smell of damp alfalfa just cut and laid flat by machines. My heavy rifle, which I had stolen from my angry father's closet, was an officer issue 03A3 without a scope. I had been waiting, standing quiet and still in dense lodgepole for such a close shot. This was a long time ago. Deer were still wild, and everybody bought $11 licenses for both deer and elk. I had woken at 4 a.m., ridden my bicycle in the dark, then walked 6 miles uphill. My plan was to do what I had done before, shoot a small deer, drag it down to the bike, and then wheel it back to my apartment by midnight. But as the elk walked past, first the cows, then the bulls, I just watched and counted. Besides being too large, the elk were beautiful. They were like those rare dreams you had where you woke up happy with a feeling that you would not always be lonely. I had never seen such large wild animals so close. All these years later, whenever I see elk on the open winter slopes of the town that managed to trap me, I like to think that there are a few up there related to the one that I did not kill. These late evenings and the early dark, the aroma of nutmeg, cinnamon, with the hint of November, touches my mood as you open the oven and show me the baking pears. I remember the scent of ripe, wild persimmons from the tall, old Maryland trees, those trees I climbed, the persimmons I picked, before heading forever west. The loneliness of a runaway starts long before the running, and if the miracle of home does happen with simplicity of food and a kitchen and love, then it is Thanksgiving every day, like today. She bought me presents, a bottle of Spanish olives, bottles of wine. I also brought her things, flowers from the sides of mountains, shooting stars in lupin, arrowleaf, and larkspur. In the evenings, she would come home from classes and put the flowers in a vase, and I would light the candles along the window ledge, the candles on the table, the candles near the bath. She would turn off all the lights and paint. Canvases leaning against the walls, Helen sitting cross-legged in front of them, a long brush in her hand, the colors muted and orange in the dim light. I would soak in the tub, the grit of my day's work coming out of my pores, until she would say, "Enzi, come here and tell me what you think." I would bring one of the candles and sit next to her, moving the flame close enough to see the brightness in the wet paint. You've just listened to another episode of Montana Voice. The music on this episode was composed by me, Steve Saroff. Those readings were from the more popular posts I have on social media, as well as a few favorite parts from the novel Paper Targets.